This is a Brain Channel program from the Department of Neurosciences at the UC San Diego School of Medicine. Visit us at uctv.tv/brain to explore cutting-edge research, treatment options for conditions related to the nervous system, and the inner workings of the human mind.
Bill Mobley for the Brain Channel, and happy to be here today with Eliezer Masley, a professor of neurosciences at UCSD. Eliezer, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Let's start with your terrific story here at UCSD and all the important things that you've encountered. But let's start with you and your history, if we could.
Sure. Well, I came to San Diego and to UCSD about 30 years ago, basically following my wife, Aida. She's originally here from San Diego. And, I received my a medical degree in Mexico, and I did a career on pathology and neuropathology there. And then after we got married, since Aida is from San Diego, we decided to come here. And the first thing I did was to look for an opportunity or a job at UCSD. And I was incredibly lucky to meet Dr. Bob Terry. Mm-hmm. I knew about him through a classical pathology book, the Robbins book, and there was a picture of one of his discoveries on that book representing a tangle of Alzheimer's mm-hmm. disease. So, and his name was quoted in there. So that's how I knew about him, and I knew he was here, so I went and talked to him, and he gave me an opportunity, and I started to work with him initially as a research associate. And then eventually I became a postdoctoral fellow with him. And then I got my first grant and became a junior faculty. And then he retired and I stayed as a faculty in the lab. And then I continue to progress through the years. And I've been incredibly happy and delighted to be here, surrounded by so many fantastic colleagues like yourself. And just being very excited about the science that we do together here and working primarily, as you know, on the pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. Also doing some work on HIV neurodegeneration and trying to develop new therapeutics for these and other neurodegenerative disorders.
The things that you've done through your career have been so instrumental for helping all the rest of us figure out what is pathogenesis, what's it look like in these various animal models? How do you create a model that replicates the key features of pathogenesis? And then once you've done that, how do you pursue that? Tell me about your, if you will, epic movement through these models and what you've learned.
Yeah, well, that's actually a very interesting and complex question, but the truth is that when we started to do this, when we started to try to develop models of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and other neurodegenerative diseases, we really didn't know anything about the genetics of these diseases. Mm-hmm. This was in the pre-genetics era of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and so on. So we could only go by the biochemistry and the little that we knew about the neuropathology. So I was extremely lucky in those days working with another very highly esteemed and beloved colleague, Tsunao Saito. Mm-hmm. And with Tsunao, we discovered that a component of the amyloid plaques of Alzheimer's disease actually that also play a role in the pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease was actually in the mix with the amyloid of the plaque. So we actually were able to isolate this component and we called it noble amyloid component and then basically back engineer from what we learn about the sequence of this protein and design an animal model based on what we knew about that protein. But again, as I said, we didn't know anything about the genetics. At the same time that we were trying to trace back the gene based on the protein information that we had, and our idea was to generate a transgenic model, a lot of the new genetics started to come out about Alzheimer's disease and about Parkinson's disease. And it turns out that this protein that we were following, that we called at that time NAC precursor or NACP, actually was homologous to another molecule called alpha-synuclein. Mm. And then it turns out that mutations on alpha-synuclein were related to Parkinson's disease. And at that time, we also thought that we're going to be related to Alzheimer's disease. So what we did is that we took the gene. At that time, we were able to clone the gene from human brains. We took this gene, and we were able to generate a transgenic animal model, that is a model that overexpressed these proteins specifically in the brain, and to generate the first transgenic model. So we thought that this model was going to mimic some aspects of Alzheimer's disease and some aspects of Parkinson's disease. But it turns out to mimic mostly Parkinson's disease, and that's when the genetics of Parkinson's disease came and showed that alpha-synuclein mutations were involved in Parkinson's disease. So a lot of interesting things happening. In the Alzheimer's field, that's when the mutations on APP came up.
Right.
And at that time, we were also collaborating with Leonard Mookie, that at the time was here at Scripps, and with Dora Game, that was at Athena Neurosciences in those days. And we were lucky to have the gene at hand and to have a novel promoter and to generate a new transgenic model that became, at that time, the state of the art in transgenic models. And the idea with all these animal models was really to recapitulate the different stages of the disease from the very early stage that we believe is the damage to the synaptic connections to the later stages when the neuronal cells die. But as you know, it turns out that really these models are models of genetics forms of the disease, and there is a need to develop the new generation of models that might mimic more the garden variety of these diseases, which is exactly what it's currently being developed, but we don't have that yet.
You know, it's very interesting. So you start with some pretty fundamental observations about the pathology of Alzheimer's disease, and you move to observations of Parkinson's, and then the genetics comes in, which makes you even more comfortable that what you're looking at is meaningful.
Absolutely.
And then you build models, and with the building of models, you create many new opportunities for understanding pathogenesis. And, you know, it's not like we're done figuring out Alzheimer's or Parkinson's yet. And yet, there's a theme, there's a series of themes that really resonate across both sporadic but also familial Alzheimer's that really has informed your work. How are you taking these multiple observations and creating a new synthesis around that?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this would answer your question or not, but really, I mean, our first observation with these models, either of Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease or of the combined form of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, that is what we called Lewy body dementia, really turn our attention to the synapse and to the connectivity in the nervous system. I think that most of the work that other groups were doing were more focused on trying to find inclusions in the cells or extracellular aggregates depositing around the cells. And this was also interesting to us. But really, what we noticed in all these models and in the very early stages is that all these proteins involved in Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and other neurodegenerative disorders are proteins that are localized to the synaptic connections, and that they play a role under physiological conditions on synaptic connectivity, synaptic plasticity, and so on, and that under disease conditions, they interfere with the function of the synapse, and they disrupt the communication among neurons. So that really was our focus, and that also became sort of like the central theme.
Yes.
Also the work and the research to try and understand how the synapse is affected in the most early stages and also how we can prevent that.
So if the synapse is the early point of departure from normal, what are the therapies that make sense for preventing synaptic dysfunction?
Wow, yeah. I think that probably you have three to four potential possibilities. Since most of these proteins appear to be like amyloid beta protein, tau, alpha-synuclein, and so on, most of these proteins appear to be accumulating at the synaptic site, mm-hmm. forming these small aggregates mm-hmm. that we call oligomers. I think you either have to reduce the synthesis of the precursor of these proteins, increase the clearance, mm-hmm. or let's say the disposal of the excess of these proteins, or reduce the tendency of these proteins to aggregate. Mm-hmm. And there is a fourth, now a new component of the theory, which is that these aggregate or proteins also spread through the synapses, and they damage the synapse not only by accumulating locally at the synapse, but also by getting transmitted or propagating from one synapse to the next. So either decrease synthesis, increase clearance, decrease aggregation, or reduce the propagation of these aggregates would be the four logical strategies. And this could be achieved by a number of different tools or mechanisms, either by suppressing genomic expression of these proteins by using antisense, or using small molecules that inhibit aggregation or propagation, or also, as we have been working for a number of years now, utilizing antibodies that either neutralize these proteins or suppress the production of some of these proteins, or even more, enhance the clearance mm-hmm. of these aggregated proteins at the synaptic site. We find that either utilizing small molecules or antibodies, it's a relatively effective way to affect all these four different potential pathways.
And you know, what's interesting, I think, to the field now is that some of these new strategies really focus on using antibodies to eliminate, if you will, to take up these proteins. So what's very exciting, and probably not everybody who's listening will get it, but the idea that one neuron can spread its problem to another neuron in a circuit is very exciting.
Yeah.
How does it happen that one neuron is in communication with another neuron in such a way to make that second neuron sick? And by the way, is that second neuron in turn able to propagate that to yet a third one? And that's really interesting work, and you've been doing it.
Yeah. I mean, in reality, a lot of this work was initially started by Stan Prusiner several years mm-hmm. ago, trying to understand how mad cow disease, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, and other prion disorders mm-hmm. Propagate. But in those days, he was focused on the idea that there was a propagation of the protein structure, let's say the aberrant or abnormal protein structure, and that one abnormal prion protein could transmit that abnormal to a normal prion protein and mm-hmm. therefore propagate. I think what we have discovered with diseases like Alzheimer's disease, like Parkinson's disease, even Huntington's disease, frontotemporal dementia, is that not only the aberrant protein structure could be transmitted from one protein to another, but actually aberrantly aggregated proteins could, as you mentioned, transmit from one cell to the next, mm-hmm. and from that cell to the next, and from that cell to the next, and really strikingly disrupt a network. So, as we know, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and other really had network dysfunction mm-hmm. disorders. So it's not only that one brain structure is malfunctioning, but it's one brain structure that transmits to the next and mm-hmm. to the next. And another interesting discovery in the field has been that we can actually stage the disease both by mm-hmm. imaging as well as by neuropathology as well as clinically mm-hmm. in different stages where the disease is concentrated in one brain region initially and then it moves to another brain region and to another brain region, and clinically that manifests as a different symptomatology. And that appears, at least the hypothesis is that appears to be related to the transmission of the abnormal protein structure from one cell to the next, either through the synaptic connections or through the transmission of abnormal protein structures to normal protein structures and so on.
It's amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
It's amazing, and it opens up this sort of network theory, if you will, of degenerative disease in a way that I think is so encouraging. Eliza, you've got a great perspective on the growth of Alzheimer's disease and the growth of other degenerative diseases. What's going to happen? How are we, with additional funding as neuroscientists, how are we going to take advantage of the new funding available to all of us to, if you will, figure this whole thing out, to get to the next stage where we understand which of those mechanisms that you've mentioned are really in play and how we can best attack them?
Yeah, I think that what we have learned through the years, and this is something that you and I have done through the years as well, is that neither of us could, as a single person or single lab, solve these huge problems, and that there is a need of forming cooperative agreements, consortiums, for groups of scientists trying to get together and resolve these problems. For example, in my lab, we have all these animal models, and you in your lab have all these expertise in axonal transport and genetic manipulations and so on. And maybe Steve Wagner in his lab has expertise in developing small molecules, and Robert Risman, the expertise on the biomarkers. So the way to take advantage of all these new funding coming for Alzheimer's disease and for related disorders is really by forming cooperatives, by forming consortiums where groups of scientists use their expertise, their individual expertise, in a complementary way that could accelerate and amplify the discoveries, particularly those discoveries that would lead to therapeutics in the next few years. And I think that, to me, UCSD has been exactly that. You know, you have that potential to link with so many amazing investigators, both at the university as well as at the Salk and Scripps and other places, where you can really form these collaborative agreements or consortiums and push the science ahead. I think also moving these collaborative agreements not only in our local environments, but also with other UC campuses or other institutions in the region. And again, our strengths synergizing with the strengths of others. I think that's definitely the way to go. And I think we need to foster and we need to work toward more collaborative science. I think that's a very important issue. Now, I only spoke about collaborating among academic institutions, but as you know, also the recommendations from the Alzheimer's summits to accelerate Alzheimer's research and accomplish the milestones for 2025 also call for cooperative agreements with biotechnology companies, with pharmaceutical companies, with nonprofit institutions. So I think, again, this idea of collaboration, cooperation, it's very important, both between academic and industry, to advance the milestones.
It's going to take more than a village
yep.
to make this work. We're very happy that you're part of our village. Eliza, thanks
thank
so
you.
Much for
no,
being
thank
here
you very much.
And for your great work.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Bill Mobley for the Brain Channel, and thanks for joining.